Welcome to the Thriving Artist Podcast, a feature of the Clark Hulings Fund for Visual Artists. The Clark Hulings Fund exists to provide training, introductions, and funding for working artists, to turn working artists into thriving artists. I'm Daniel DeGree, your host. Our guest today is Etsuko Ichikawa. Etsuko is an artist who works in a variety of media, from performance, sound, and film to glass installation, sculpture, and drawing. She's known for her pyrographs and aquagraphs, or drawings made from fire and water. She's also a 2015 Clark Hulings Fund Business Accelerator Grant finalist. Welcome to the show, Etsuko. We know you're an artist, of course, but can you take a minute to tell us just a little bit more in your own words about yourself and what you do for a living?
Sure. I was born in Tokyo, Japan, and grew up there. And my parents like arts and crafts, so I grew up in an environment that I had access to all those beautiful things. And my education is primarily painting and sculpture and some theater art. Then I moved to Seattle in 1993 to study glass art. And that was why I moved to Seattle being kind of like a contemporary glass art mecca, having Tilchak Glass School as well as Dale Chihuly Studio in town. So my life in Seattle started around that time, and I proceeded to work on my artistic career, showing my work, visual art, painting, sculpture, and then I discovered this new technique using glass as my medium to draw on paper. So I started working on this new series called Glass Pyrograph, which is literally fire drawing on paper using molten glass to draw. And then I started showing with galleries. Then something really changed was Fukushima nuclear disaster happened in 2011 in my home country in Japan. Then I started thinking, what is really the role of artists, you know, current time, our life, our time, as well as what do I want to really do with my art? Then I started working on different kind of work, more speaking about environmental issues or human rights or humanity. I'm still a visual artist, but I'm in a kind of interesting time that I'm trying to seek what is my media and what is my direction is.
So, Etsuko, you're known for pyrographs and aquagraphs. These are drawings made with fire and water. And for our listeners, you can actually see these at clarkhulingsfund.org/Etsuko. I'm going to spell that to you, but you may want to have it up during the podcast so that you can kind of see some of what Etsuko is talking about. So clarkhulingsfund.org/ETSUKO, which is pronounced Etsuko. These pyrographs and aquagraphs, can you describe them? Tell us what they are and what the process is, Etsuko.
Pyrograph is literally fire drawing. Pyro is fire and graph is drawing. And I use molten glass as my paintbrush or drawing brush to draw onto paper. So the process is I gather molten glass in the glass studio and then bring it onto the pipe and bring it to the paper. And paper is usually on the floor. And I draw directly onto the paper, just like you have seen calligrapher using a long brush, Chinese brush, and then draw intuitively. That's how I do to create glass pyrograph. And aquagraph, in contrast, is water drawing. Aqua is water, as you all know. And how I do is my format is much smaller with aquagraph, and I use glass droplet to draw letter. Most of the time, I use Sanskrit letter onto the paper or panel so that small glass droplet, water drop is sitting on the paper, and then I kind of halfway flip the paper, and I use candle soot or candle to apply the flame and soot. So the soot would remain onto the surface of water, and I usually put them back for 24 hours overnight to have water evaporate or soak into the paper. And so the remaining become a water drawing with candle soot.
So that's really fascinating. Tell us, You know, how did you get started doing this type of work, Etsuko?
The last paragraph happened by accident. That was in 2004 when I was assisting an artist at Piltak Glass School, North in Washington. And I was bringing this hot bit of glass on a long pipe. So I go to glass furnace where the molten glass is and gather that and then move to the station where this artist was working. And because I was moving really fast to keep this glass bit so hot, I dropped the bit onto the concrete, and that made a beautiful mark. And this kind of thing happened all the time in a glass studio. However, this moment was something special, and I had this like sort of like aha moment, and literally I had goosebumps. I went back that day with the paper and then started drawing and experimenting how I can use glass as a drawing medium. And aquagraph, I started much later. After working with glass pyrograph for about 10 years, I was like, I think I want to explore different media. However, in the same line that I do, to use some element, fire or water, leaving this material or media kind of let things happen. Glass pyrograph, I use my body and create and have a good control of doing that with my glass blowing skill. However, moving a glass and fire just naturally happen, and I don't control that. And same thing about water and soot, that I focus on pointing out the candle to certain water drops, but when it's a little bit windy, it blows away. And it happens, you know, as it should be. So that's how I work.
So, Etsuko, how is your business affected by the fact that you do work in such unusual media? You know, what are the pros and cons, and what's kept you doing them for nearly two decades?
The last paragraph was certainly unique to many people. I have seen artists using fire as a medium to draw or burn something to create work. But I don't think anybody used hot glass the way I do to draw. More abstract, sort of like action painting, but I use glass to draw intuitively. I built the audience by showing the process because they are so drawn to how I do work and visually very inspiring to them. So showing the video of process and performing in front of people by doing the process and making the work really helped me to build the audience and reaching out. And the same thing for aquaglass. It's something to do with those elements that I use, fire and water, and some kind of intuitive way of working, as well as spirituality that I associate with my work. And I think that's where people find my work.
I really like that you're underscoring the sort of performance element to the work that you do. I do think that is part of the secret of it. You know, on the front of your website, which we'll mention at the end of the show, and in your profile, which we've already directed people to at the top of the show, there is a video, sort of shows your process, shows you at work. And of course, that's just barely touching the surface of what you do. But I think it's fascinating to watch what you do. And that the performance is, in essence, part of the art. So I'm glad you're sort of underscoring that, that that's some of the secret sauce with you. I'm wondering, you know, recently you've been using your art as an instrument for social and community engagement. So I want to know, how are you accomplishing this, and what caused you to change this subject matter? I know that you mentioned the nuclear accident in Japan, but is there more to it than that? Because, you know, how does that sort of extend and tie into your intentions for social engagement and social change?
Fukushima disaster back in 2011 was a trigger to me to shift my work. But it took me about a good 2 years. I needed to process that thinking, what art means in our society or what artists could do. So the role of art and artists in our current time, considering what we would leave for the future. And that ties to the thinking of what we make, for example, nuclear energy, you know, do we really need that? And what are we leaving for the future? So the socially engaged art, still in the art format, but reaching out to different audience and broader audience. I'm really interested in doing that more.
So, Etsuko, do you feel pressure to maintain the momentum you've had as an artist with your earlier works, your pyro and aquagraphs, even though you're creating a new kind of work? Is that haunting you, the need to increase your momentum? And is it hard? Is it a struggle?
I would say yes, because I was worried I may lose people that followed me through this past work, and am I going to lose the galley that I worked with? However, I needed to be honest to myself, and I knew this is the direction I wanted to go to. So I started talking about this openly to fellow artists, people at the galleries and museums, and they are interested in new directions. And they understand artists not going to stick with one thing. Some artists would do for the whole life, but some don't. And I'm on the latter one. And I wanted to trust the way I see the new direction, and I just needed to do it. And it was a scary time period that I went through. But at the end, I think it's going to just all work out.
Etsuko, you're at this pinnacle with your work where you're looking towards social engagement, crossing into new territory artistically. So how do you anticipate this shift is going to impact the brand identity you've already created for yourself as an artist? Will it muddle it a little bit in this transition? Will it clarify who you are as a brand?
I'd be curious to ask this question to my collectors. Because this is all me from 10 years ago to now to 10 years from now. It's all the same person. Just the outcome of what I'm creating is different and will differ, continue to differ. So I don't know how they identify one artist's work. Do they identify the work because of the style? Do they identify the work because of the artist itself, you know, the nature of the artist and intent behind? So I'm curious to ask that question to other people. And then I think I know the answer. It doesn't really matter to me. Long way to materialize my way of communicating with people through my art. So Pyrograph was one good example that I did. And the filmmaking and more socially engaged community-based work could be another way of doing that.
Well, we're definitely glad to hear it. So will you continue to use performance as an element of your future works? Is that something that you're going to continue to pursue?
I actually don't know. Glass Pyrograph, the performance aspect of my work through Glass Pyrograph was natural because the process of making was really intriguing to many people. And they asked me to do, why don't you show this process as a part of your work? That's how it started. Originally, I wasn't interested in doing that. And then in the first film, I was in the film and performing. And I was comfortable doing that because I think this message needs to be come out from myself rather than asking somebody to act on it or act, you know, under my direction. So that's my performance aspect sort of continue to happen there, but in a very different way.
So, Etsuko, I'm going to shift gears now to ask you some questions about selling your artwork and sort of turn more to the business side of your art. And before we do that, I just want to mention that the Clark Hulings Fund delivers podcast courses like this at the pleasure of our audience. And so that means if you're finding value in what you're hearing, a gift of $15 per month would be a welcome and appropriate way to sponsor this show's ongoing broadcast. A portion of our funding also goes to deliver direct education to artists who've demonstrated a clear, achievable plan for transforming their businesses into self-sustaining and thriving ones that fill the world with art. So share this commitment with us now at clarkhulingsfund.org/thrive. That's clarkhulingsfund.org/thrive. thrive. We'd certainly appreciate it. Now, Etsiko, you have strong relationships with galleries. How did you establish those connections? Was it only that first instance that you described earlier on, where they sort of found you at the first show, or how did you reach out from there to begin working with multiple galleries?
Most of the times, the galleries that phoned me, and that was a good way for me to start a business, and especially outside of Seattle. In Seattle, I approached the gallery, and that sometimes worked, but that sometimes didn't work. But most of the time, they phoned me, seeing my work at different art fairs or online, and that's how I developed the relationship to begin with. And some galleries maintained to work with me, and I'm still working with them for years. And some galleries, because of the direction I changed, I decided to depart from them. So some of them are happy with seeing my work changing and following what I do. And some galleries are attached to one series of work.
Well, that's interesting. So that means that you used a combination of sales and marketing. So you said that, in a couple of cases you approach galleries, that's the sales side of things. But marketing really drove most of it for you through events, and you suggested art fairs were an example of that, putting your work online. So that really got the attention of galleries that want to work with you. So I'm hoping that our audience of working artists is listening to this. So another question then, you mentioned cutting some galleries loose when it was no longer a fit. Well, how do you vet your galleries in the first place, Etsiko? How do you know that you want to work with them? Can you take us through that process sort of step by step?
What I usually do is to look at their business. And website is one of the, I think, best tools that I can see what's going on with the gallery. So what I look for is the representing artists. Who are they showing? And do I like their works? Where are they showing? They show only at the galleries? They show at the different locations? Do they go out to promote their work outside of their galleries, outside of our regions? So the basically events, activities that gallery associate with or present our artist work, I would look at their record of work, kind of like a, look at your artist resume, fellow artist resume, and see what they're doing. The same thing I do for the gallery to see, as well as I think the key to me is to meet the owner. And sometimes gallery can be a very much starting up and young owner, like I was starting my own career. And that was really interesting time, that those two different energy of kind of newborn that needs to survive through the art world, and it worked really well. And sometimes galleries are more experienced and have a history of years of representing established artists. That to me, it's an honor to work with that kind of gallery, but make sure that they would pay attention to me, so as other well-known artists. So it's always a unique occasion, a unique experience to each one of them. And each one, I have a different story.
So how do you maintain the relationships with curators or gallerists and forge new ones as your work evolves? I mean, what I'm asking you about, Etsiko, is really, do you maintain contact with them through a newsletter, an email blast? Do you follow them on social? Do you have regular phone calls? What is it you do to keep those relationships alive?
I network a lot, especially for my first several years, to show my work first locally in Seattle. This is my base. This is my home. That's where I can do experimentation. That's where I can talk to gallerists or curators in person. So I go to openings, I introduce myself, and I meet curators through the artist talk or events at the museums or any institutions that I'm interested in working with. So it's been a long process, but repeatedly, and they would remember my face, and eventually they know what I do. And then if I really want to approach, I always have something to give away. So a business card, of course, or postcard from my past show, or small brochure I made or small catalog that other guys made for me. So I always carry that in my bag, and continuously and shamelessly, actually, just promoting my work. That's how I do. As well as Seattle is, I think, a wonderful city for artists because the size is not that huge like LA or New York. And we know each other and we help each other. So if somebody is looking for a gallery, we refer somebody. And if there's a project come to me, it's not a good fit to my work, I would refer somebody. So those networking within the community is extremely important. And I really treasure that. We help each other. So that's how we support each other to, you know, look for or meet people or introduce each other.
That's really good to hear that networking, marketing, and sales are all sort of a part of your business. And, you know, at the start of the show, what the listeners don't know is before we began speaking, I said, Etsiko, what are you doing today? You know, what's your day like today? And you said, this is my office day. This is the day that I manage the communications and I do interviews and I do other things related to running the business of art. And I thought, that's really great. She has an office day, right? So now you're letting us in on the inside world of running the art business where you're networking and marketing and selling. So let me ask you a question. Have you run into a situation where a curator or a gallerist is either not supportive of your new work that you're doing or of sort of the direction that you want to go with reaching a larger community? And if you've run into that, you know, what did you do?
Actually, I haven't experienced that yet. I think the curators or gallery, you know, gallery associates that I know already have a base of trust. And I think I needed to build that for, you know, spending 10 years doing so. But around that time when I started changing my work, they already know my work. So far, I don't have anybody decided to part working with me because of the shift of my work. Instead, they're interested in seeing what's going to be happening. Then the other way around is that when I decide to change the relationship with, for example, galleries, I had a number of galleries that wanted to show my glass pyrograph, and in some way it was overexposed, and I wanted to focus on working with few galleries. So this is just happening last year and this year, and I'm still in the process of making the change. But I needed to make a decision instead of they making a decision that I would choose the galleries that I would like to work continuously, showing glass pyrograph, aquagraph, then continue to show my work, whatever I'm producing.
So I want to ask you one more question at the risk of sort of, you know, beating a dead horse here. I want to ask you about when you have to cut a gallery loose. So when you cut ties with galleries, can you do it without burning bridges?
I hope to say yes. I mean, I hope to say nothing bad is happening here. However, I will give you more like a, you know, clear answer with the example so that you get a real sense of how I did this or have been doing this. So, for example, I have 7 galleries in the U.S. and 2 internationally, and I'm cutting down to 3. And in order to do so, it's a lot of communication with the galleries and lots of emails and asking them to return the work, and I'm still in the process of doing so. When I first approached that to bring this idea of asking the return of the work, which means they won't have any inventory of my work, and they would take down my work from their website. Basically, they stop representing my work. And I really needed to communicate with them sincerely that I really appreciate it and appreciate what they have done to promote my work and show my work and sell my work and create this group of clientele that they basically, you know, brought to me through this work. But explaining, I already had a turning point a few years back. This took me about 2-3 years to get to this, to tell you this, but I no longer make this type of work. And if you understand, the shift that I made and be making, I'd like to have these pieces back to me, because the remaining work is just the existing work I created in the past is so important to me now, more than ever. Then I'd like to have them back to my studio. And I have a control to send them or have other gallery show the work or a museum show the work, but not necessarily 7 or 8 galleries, you know, setting and showing my work at the same time. So it's more like exclusivity that I could have, and I could have a control, and I could work closely with only a few galleries who would most appreciate me doing so, because they have more power to show my work. Does it make sense?
Yeah, it totally does. I really like that you are not disempowered in the face of your gallery relationships. It's nothing against galleries, but it's that, you know, you as the artist are who generates the work. You're the central figure, and the galleries are there to help facilitate what you do. And of course, you know, they get their cut and they have a role to play, but you are still the progenitor of this work. So it's really important that you maintain that dominance, if you will, or that preeminence in the relationship. It's fantastically encouraging to hear that you are doing that. All right, I promise I'll shift off galleries. And to do that, I want to ask you sort of a double question. Are galleries still your primary source of revenue then? Because you've also sold your work at art fairs and through social media. And maybe you could compare what that's like versus selling it through galleries.
This basically works on paper is, I would say, 90% sold through representing galleries. Now it's 3 of them, and they do really well. Other resources that I have is public art and commissions. And public art comes in different forms. That could be installations, mostly permanent installation for, you know, public schools or public spaces. I like making hanging installations and different media, glass, resin, and I'll be interested in using sound and, you know, video for that in the future. So I think my income is a combination of that. And then with the gallery, income is so unpredictable. You don't know when they're going to sell my work, right? So I just need to wait to receive a check or a wire transfer. And with the public art, it's almost like getting a job, full-time job sometimes, for 2-year cycle. So you have an idea when I get a contract, when I get first payment, and so on, for about 2-year cycle. So this is a great combination. And as well as I keep applying grants, anything I think I have a chance, I would just keep applying. So that's also a part of the income.
That's really excellent. So are you seeking additional avenues for marketing and selling your work now that it's sort of focused on different subject matter?
Yes. I think I figured out all those tools and things that I could do with my work on paper. And now my challenge is to do the same or even exceed to do what I have done with socially engaged art. And because this field is so interesting that somehow I want to think away from commercial art, but at the same time, I think that is more even powerful to reach out to broader community and audience. So I see a lot of potential there.
Well, I want to ask you a little bit about these public art commissions. And I guess my question is about sort of the project management side of it. So with a public art commission, you have to collaborate. You know, it's not you alone, but maybe there's an engineer, a commissioner. There are different relationships involved in producing a publicly commissioned work of art beyond the artist. So how do you maintain those relationships and make sure that everybody meets their deadlines while you're still able to execute your vision for the piece?
So first process would be to apply for artist pool for different agencies. For example, my work is in the portfolio of Washington State, King County, and City of Seattle. And those are the places that they offer me a project. And there's a jury process to go through that. Sometimes I have to make a presentation, a proposal, and so on. And once the project is committed and have a contract signed, there are a group of people I work with. One is an agent, and that person would be a project manager, I would call. He or she is going to overview the whole process of commission throughout the time, like usually 2 years cycle. And then I have a peer, a group of people I work with are school committee, and usually, for example, the work I'm doing is with the school in Washington State, and they have a committee member made of principal and student and parents and community members and then an architect. So I need to work with them to make sure that my work fits in their mission and the purpose of commissioning me for the, you know, like a large amount of budget that they do for the artwork in a public space. And in my end, in my studio side, I usually hire assistants, and I work with engineer, I work with architects, and I work with people who can draw like a rendering and things like that digitally. So I have a group of people temporarily work for that project. And I don't keep them to work with me, you know, for other projects. That particularly I find and hire for a project. And then I usually, for the public art, usually have a dedication event. So I outreach, you know, have an opportunity to meet with the community that I usually don't have access to. For example, school kids or PTAs. Or graduate from the school, for example, because I'm just working on a school project. That's like a large group of people through the different step by step, like different process through the project that I work with.
I love that you're covering the project management side of this. We have a previous podcast with an artist where we sort of described her as the CEO of an art project or the artist as CEO. And so showing us the inside of this, Etsiko, all the elements it takes to do an art project, that it's not just your creative self, but there is an administrative self at work too. That's really powerful, really important. I'm going to ask you one more question about sort of this side of things, the marketing and sales and a part of it. And then we will go to business strategy. So your publicly commissioned art, is that mainly a part of your PR or marketing strategy? Does it help you get more attention? Or is it more like another form of performance art? I mean, why not just solely focus on maintaining your gallery presence, since that accounts for, you know, 90% of your sales? Why go this route of doing publicly commissioned art in the first place?
I think I like to reach out to audience that they don't necessarily go to galleries. And, you know, galleries really heavily focused on, you know, working with collectors. And the strong galleries, they do have, you know, people they work with, sell work to. And they have a community. Each gallery has a different community, but mostly focused on working with museum curators for museum collections or collectors, especially, you know, within the area, a lot of times they're locally associated. And through the public art is beyond that kind of field that I, for example, if I have a museum show, that's a great exposure. And that's also different audience and maybe beyond having a solo show at the gallery. And a lot of people would come see my work. Then public art is even more. If my work is outside freestanding by, let's say, Ferryport in Seattle, and imagine, and who knows who's going to see my work. And I really like that part of my work being exposed and introduced to, so to say, random people. And it's up to them to decide if they want to come closer and look at it, or, you know, wants to come back and see it again. And galleries and museums already have a box and context that they create, and people have an expectation to come and see. But public art, they don't have that. So I really like that kind of like a loose and open, like wide open concept of public art.
That's really helpful, really insightful. I think a lot of our listeners are very interested in public art. So we're going to talk a little bit as we go to the third part of our show, the third and final part about business strategy. But first, I want to mention to our audience, if you're finding value in what you're hearing, a gift of $15 per month lets you sponsor this show's ongoing broadcast. So please visit clarkhulingsfund.org/thrive to continue bringing content like this to the public. We'd certainly appreciate it. Now, Etsiko, how have you budgeted for projects in the past, and how are you budgeting now with your new works? Can you tell us a little bit about the financial side?
I needed to learn this a lot. I wasn't really good at it for the first 5-6 years. But for example, if I have a solo show, I put this budget. Either it was asked to do, and then grant application has been a great practice for me to do this, because you have to submit a budget without knowing exactly what I would be making for the next year. I would say it is sometimes really hard to figure out what do I really need to accomplish this project. But after doing this over 10 years, 15 years, I'm getting pretty good at it. I have resources from different places, and I have my sort of like a notebook of where to ask if I don't know how to budget it. I have contact lists, so I have a way to find it, because I don't know everything, of course. So each time, for example, if I'm making, my dream is for the next 2 years to create a feature length film. First one was 5 minutes. Second one I just finished was 20 minutes. And I think I'm getting ready to make a longer one. And how and what does it take to do that? And I don't know yet, but I will be talking to directors that I admire, and I'll be talking to people in the film industry to see how they run business. So I think that having resources, and also don't hesitate to ask. And it's okay that I don't know, I'm learning. So I just ask for support, and they'll be happy to talk to you. That has been the case for me.
Also, by changing the direction of your art too, you're in the business world, we would think of this as retooling or rebranding. You're, even if what you're doing is really taking a turn and offering a different type of work under essentially the same brand, there's some risk there. And so have you budgeted, or have you thought about the financial side of covering yourself during that transition? Do you protect yourself by building up a reserve fund as you go from selling one type of work to trying to sell a new type, in other words?
Yes, I have been prepared for this, because I know that maybe a whole year, I may not have much income coming from my art practice. And of course, it's not enough money to maintain my work and what I do for a year, so I have to keep working and finding. But I had this sense and kind of like urgency with the financial aspect of my work when I decided to change. Then the reality is, past 2 years, things haven't changed much. This was a surprise to me, and actually a relief to me. First, I thought that if I say I stopped making this series of work, then people would not be interested in buying them, because it feels like it's the past. So I was a little bit concerned about saying that, openly, but I did. And Gally didn't really care, and people didn't really care. They like the work, and they like the work. And they also see more value because it's less out there. And so that turned out to be a good thing I did. But at the same time, so I still depend on this income from mostly selling glass pyrograph pieces through a few galleries now. And I would just set aside some funds coming from that source and keep them as my budget for the future work. So I created this like a pattern or system in my art bookkeeping, that when I have income coming from any source, mostly galleries, I set aside, let's say, 40% or 30%, whatever I can do, as a part of the future budget for filmmaking. So that's one example. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But at least I try to do that and maintain and you know, keep trying, I think it's going to work out.
So it's fascinating to listen to you, because it never would have occurred to me that you would stop making so much of one kind of work, start on a new set of projects, and somehow the perception might be that, well, those works are less valuable or less desirable, or we don't want those because she's not making those anymore. I'm surprised, because I would have thought it would have been the opposite, that, well, Etsuko is not going to make any more of these. You know, at least for the foreseeable future, she may never make these again. This is all you can get. So it would seem to me that get them while you can, the price ought to go up, not down. Is that not true?
Yeah, it depends on how you see it. But other thing I do and I offer is commission-based. So I do not make the work for sending out to the galleries for their inventories. So their inventory is what they have, and what I have in my studio is that's it. But I was very productive for the 10 years, so I have a good source to feed them for another few years. Then at the same time, if they say, I'd like to have, you know, I have seen this work somewhere, but I'd like to have something similar, or, you know, my house, the wall dimensions is this, and can you make this? So if that comes into the conversation, I'm open to discuss the commission. So only time I make new work is commission-based.
Well, so do you think that your work is going to result, the new direction that you're taking, do you think it's going to result in getting you more and bigger commissions? I know that the smaller works will probably continue to generate a revenue stream, or the older works will. But is part of the reason here that you're shooting for a better financial situation, bigger and better sales?
That's a good question. I don't know. I will find out in a few years, I think. I think the revenue, the way of receiving income may change. That's my sense, because the way I will be showing my work is different. It's maybe not necessary based on location, for example, gallery or museum or consultant, art consultant, but through the internet or through distributing film, broadcasting, I think there's a completely different way of reaching and getting income from. This is something I would like to learn more this year, and I think I need to focus on finding a new venue, a new way of reaching out and getting my work out and being able to support my work financially through that, rather than based on the work I created in the past, so that I can create this sustainable, you know, financial kind of new system with my art career.
Okay, so in winding down the show, Etsuko, I will first want to thank you that and say that your candor is very helpful, especially when you're saying, I don't really know, or I'm not really good at this, but I will get good at this. Those are all really authentic insights and attitudes and feelings, and that's definitely what we want on the Thriving Artist Podcast. So I'm very pleased that you've agreed to come on and do the show for us. So let me ask you just a couple of questions about upcoming projects. So you've also been working on a new film. Can you give us any exclusive, or is it still under wraps? Is there anything that you can tell us or would like to?
The most recent film that I finished is called Radiating Echoes, What is Beautiful? And it is a little bit less than 20 minutes length. And I only showed once locally in Seattle to about 80 people. So it was a very small screening. And I haven't put that online yet, just because I'd like to show it on a larger screen rather than monitor. This film is about asking questions, what is beautiful to all of us? And how I did was I went to Washington State School for the Blind and asked people who are visually impaired. Some are blind from birth, and some became visually impaired at some point of their lives, and they have various sight. And simply, I asked one question, what is beautiful to you? So the interview went on for 2 days, and I recorded their interviews and edited their voices. And I brought them into a tunnel, which is a part of the nuclear facility that I keep going from the first film. So So this time I used a 1,000 feet long tunnel, which is a pitch dark inside. You lose a sense of space. You lose a sense of time within there. And I released the voice there by using a large speaker, and the voice would echo for a long time and come back. So this film was, to me, I wanted to ask this question to myself. I think that's really the reason I wanted to make this film, because I wonder what is really important to us and what we need for the future generations, and what does it mean to have nuclear energy in this society, and what if I don't see anything? Is there a racial issue exist? Because I'm a visual artist primarily, so I sense and perception is really, you know, heavily based on vision and visual perception. So I wanted to challenge myself and ask, what if I don't have it? What's the value? You know, so that's where the film idea came from.
So, Etsuko, I'm going to ask you one sort of fun question at the end of the show that we like to sometimes ask. If you could go back in time to when you first started your career and you knew then what you know now, could do things differently, what would you do differently?
Wow, that's a good question. I think I should have been, or I want to be more flexible about, you know, more like open to opportunities or open to new directions. I think I was focused on one thing, and I think that's my strength as well. But I would say to myself, you know, why not sticking to one thing and just be open about whatever? And there are so many possibilities and opportunities out there that you don't even know. And if you are in a little cave working on one thing and focusing and, you know, kind of short-sighted, you would miss it. So I would say just kind of have more playtime when you're really busy. Take a break and do something completely different and be inspired by something completely different. That would be an advice to myself.
Well, Etsuko, it's been really great having you. You've been listening to the Thriving Artist Podcast, a feature of the Clark Hulings Fund for Visual Artists. For more information on Etsuko Ichikawa, visit etsukoichikawa.com. That's etsukoichikawa.com. And some of you will have to rewind the show to play that back, but that's okay. For information on the Clark Hulings Fund, visit clarkhulingsfund.org. And be sure and follow our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Etsuko. It's been really fantastic.
Thank you so much.